The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome to another episode of the Dose of Leadership podcast, the show that brings you inspiring and educational interviews with today's most relevant and motivating leaders. Each episode is dedicated to highlight real-life leadership and influence experts who dedicate their lives to the pursuit of the truth, common sense, and courageous leadership. And now, here's your host, Richard Ryerson.
Hey, welcome to the show. So happy you're tuning into Dose of Leadership, particularly happy with this episode. Something unique, something new I've never done before. I decided to turn on the microphone. I got with my group a couple weeks ago on a Wednesday evening, some of the members of my Dose of Leadership University. And the Dose of Leadership University, if you don't know, is basically essentially a mastermind group that I started in March of 2020. Looked for 30 founding members. I opened the door, closed the door for those 30 founding members, and just kind of wanted to do life with these guys and see if I could create this interactive community of like-minded individuals where we meet twice a month, intentionally twice a month, on Saturday mornings online, and we try to solve real-life leadership challenges, real-life problems, try to come up with real-world solutions, deliver real-world results to these challenges. And it's exceeded my expectations. It's been so life-changing for myself, and I know for the members of this community. And one of the members, Paul Stringer of the group, he's been with me since March of last year. He said, wouldn't it be great if we turn on the microphones and just, we have such powerful conversations. Wouldn't it be great if we just turn on the mic, pick the topic, and see where it went? And that's what we did. We turned on the mic. We talked about fear, anxiety, how it impacts and has impacted our leadership journey, how we deal with it, how we harness it. And it's a great conversation. It'll give you a sense of flavor of what it's like to be part of the Dose of Leadership University. And that's why we're doing this. Not only is it value-packed, but it gives you a sense of what it's like to be part of that community. Because, you know, you can go to landing pages. You can hear about masterminds. You don't know what it's like to be a part of one. And it's an investment. And it's like, wow, I just don't know if it'll be worth our time. So this will give you a sense of what it's like to interact with the Dose of Leadership University. Again, you can learn more at my website, doseofleadership.com/university, or you can find the menu page and just click on the landing page there, and it'll tell you all about it. It'll show you a little intro video. It'll show you the bios and the backgrounds of my mentors, the people that are helping me grow this community. You'll see they're people just like you and I, and you also can see and watch their video testimonials of what it's been like for them to be part of this group over the past year. And it'll give you a sense, and this conversation will give you a sense of what it's like to interact with each other. It was a lot of fun. It's very powerful. I'm going to do this from time to time because it's a lot of value-packed content. A little bit different than a normal conversation or an interview that I have on here. It's a little bit different than a solo episode of me just talking. It's just real-life people talking about real-life challenges and issues. I think you're really going to enjoy it. Hey, thanks for being a supporter of this show. If you haven't done so, please follow me on your favorite podcast application. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, they all work. Dose of Leadership is there. And if you're so inclined, huge call to action for you, be hugely beneficial to me if you would write a review for the show. It's not intuitive on all of them. Apple Podcasts, you just basically search for my show, click on my icon, and scroll to the bottom, says write a review. Man, it'd be wonders if you could do that for me. I'd really appreciate it. Reach out to me too. Go to the contact form. Tell me where you're at. Tell me what you think about this episode and what kind of episode you'd like to see. What kind of topics would you like me to address? And maybe this group address is something I'd like to do on a regular basis, is bring my members of my Dose of Leadership University onto the show and bring you continued value-packed conversation. Something that's a little different, something that a little different than just your kind of standard conversation or interview or even a solo episode. Again, thanks for your support. Let's get on with this conversation with myself and some of my members of my Dose of Leadership University here on Dose of Leadership. All right, guys, good evening. Thanks for joining this special session. I'm excited to meet with you guys again. I always enjoy our conversations together, but welcome. Thanks for doing this on a Wednesday evening. But what I'd like to talk about, just kind of throw a topic out there, is just this kind of idea of dealing with anxiety, fear, if you will, you know, and this kind of comes off the heels of the session that we had, a couple Saturdays ago, almost a month ago, where I was talking about my time that I was spending with this organization, helping them go through this book, The Three Vital Questions. And when I first talked to them, when I got to get to know them, and I, you know, would spend a lot of time just introducing letting everybody introduce themselves and what they did, how long they've been with the organization, what are they hoping to accomplish, what does success look like at the end of the sessions that we've been working together? And the vast majority of them, probably 80%, it said that they struggle with in the work environment and in life in general, dealing with anxiety. And I began thinking about that and thought, gosh, you know, our society, our culture kind of puts this value on anxiety and fear, and it's almost that there's something wrong with us that we feel anxiety. And if you've listened to this show and you guys know me, that I'm a big proponent of saying some of the language that I've used, you've heard me use, is, look, the fear and uncertainty never goes away, right? Stop. So let's just get on with it. Let's get comfortable with being uncomfortable. Let's be the composed force. When we talk about those five C's, and the first one is composed, that's what being composed is all about. Like, how do I be this composed force in this chaotic environment? Because that's, to me, is the sign of victory, or the ultimate, or the secret sauce, if you will, of leading significant lives. If I can be this composed force, both in personal and professional life, I'm ahead of the game. And harnessing this dynamic tension, if you will, I gave this rubber band example a few weeks ago, where, you know, at the top is where you want to achieve, the top finger, and I got a rubber band and my bottom finger is pulling the bottom one. And if I'm perfectly aligned with it, that's where I want to be. That's a sweet spot. And I want to harness that anxiety dealt with that, because that anxiety is going to give me some sort of constraint, a constraint that's going to, if I embrace it, is going to produce creativity. It's going to produce ideas. It's going to produce, a motivation, inspiration to do the impossible. I mean, that's how we went to the moon, right? It's like people were harnessing that anxiety and that dynamic tension. And I think too often culture, self-help, consultants, they try to sell us on this idea of getting rid of the anxiety. And I just think that's a bunch of hogwash. I said a lot there. So what do you guys think? To me, it's about harnessing it. What do you guys think?
Yeah, Richard, I think this is a great topic. My name is Joe, and I'm a technical program manager in Northern California. And I had a recent experience. It's about 3 years ago. I found myself in a position where the company that I've been with for 22 years was offering me a package to either leave the company, or I could find a job within the company. And this was a very fearful situation for me. And I was not sure what to do. And what I ended up doing to get through it is I talked to a lot of friends. So the community aspect of using some of my friends to get advice was a key item to help me get over the fear. But you know, what I found myself doing was I focused on all the negatives. Mm-hmm. So I focused on the negative tension. I thought about, all the relationships that I'd made in the 22 years, of my employment. I talked about being comfortable with the work environment that I worked in. And at the end of the day, I decided that I was going to take a risk. I was going to take a new job with a company that had a better reputation. It also involved me potentially commuting 100 miles in traffic. So basically from Sacramento to San Francisco, which was something that I dwelled on a lot. And once again, the negative aspects of that. Now fast forward 3 years later, and what I can tell you is that I completely overlooked all the positives.
Right.
My focus, yes, my fear showed itself with a lot of focus on the negatives. What I overlooked was the ability to work with some brilliant people in one of the most pretty, the gorgeous city of San Francisco, and all of the new learning that I could do. And financially, it's also paid off as well. Looking back on it, a lot of my worry, a lot of my fear was all about the negative, and I downplayed the positive things that can happen. And so now when I'm in these situations, I try to spend more time thinking about, hey, what can go right if I take this risk? And I found that to be very helpful.
Yeah, that's,
so I'll wrap it up there.
That's interesting. I mean, that makes sense. I guess it leads me to the question of like, yeah, I mean, how does anxiety manifest itself? And I'm listening to your story, and certainly, yeah, it's so, I mean, that's what, it's the negative stuff that causes the fear, right? It feeds on the fear. And I guess I'm trying to get at what are we so afraid of, I guess? Are we afraid of the change? Are we afraid of the long commute from your example? And sometimes when I found myself in those situations, Joe, like you did, if when I just asked that question, what am I so afraid of? You know, I guess what it means is even if you were focusing on the negative and you asked that question, like, whoa, taking that pause and got to a choice point, like, what are we trying to accomplish here? Which is kind of the same thing of in a roundabout way looking at the positives, right? In other words, so if I take that pause and instead of just going, oh, the commute's going to suck, you know, and all the other list of things that you were talking about, if you went to this choice point and said, okay, what is my ultimate objective? And if you would have asked that question, the string of positive might have come, right? Does that make sense? I don't know. I'm just trying to put myself.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
for sure. And what's resonating with me when you're describing that is the fear of change. Right?
Yeah.
There was so much that I knew coming out of my 22 years of experience, and there was so much I didn't know with moving to a new company. And so, yeah, I think that's a great, the fear of the unknown.
And that's really a false fear, right? The fear of the unknown is almost even more palpable or more painful than the actual event. Like I had Mark Nepo on the show. I just released that episode yesterday. And he was talking about in the episode about the cancer. He said the fear of the cancer was actually more painful than the actual treatment itself.
Interesting.
The actual treatment itself and going through the actual physical manifestation of cancer was less painful than the fear of what he was afraid, right? And so that's pretty, I thought that was pretty powerful.
Yeah, that's a powerful statement.
So then how do we get that? I mean, so how do we, easy to talk about here at zero speed, right? When none of us are really suffering at the present moment or life isn't in danger or anything like that. How do we intentionally get ourselves to that point, right? That's the key. Stacey, you brought up too, you know, like, before we started the recording, I was like, what does it even look like? What does fear even look like? I mean, right? How does anxiety manifest itself in individuals, right? Inaction, stagnation. What are your thoughts?
So I'm Stacey Jacobs. Thank you for having us on tonight, Richard, for mm-hmm. this great topic. One thing I wanted to say is an example that I've seen. I know that leaders are fearful of being vulnerable in front of their peers, in front of their teams, in front of the organization. And I think they have high expectations and unrealistic expectations sometimes of how they feel they're supposed to be as a leader. And I was thinking about this last night, and I think one thing that I wrote down, it came to me right as I was getting ready for bed, and it's this: great leaders need to stand up and talk less so that they can sit down and listen more.
Mm-hmm.
And so if there were a time when, so if you look at vulnerability, for example, and you feel, if you as a leader think that in order to be vulnerable, I've got to share my life stories, I've got to, you know, just dump everything out on the table. Vulnerability doesn't mean just that. It's not even comprised of just dumping out every emotion you have on the table. One way of being vulnerable is that you don't always need to stand up and lecture or present a PowerPoint or stand up for the group and have something important that you've got to share. Sometimes that vulnerability means that you're willing to sit down with the group, listen, truly listen to what they have to say, take in what you're hearing, and really process that and think about the ways in which you can take that information to make changes in your organization from the people who are giving you the answers.
Yeah, it's interesting that the fear of vulnerability, I think you're right, that I don't know if we can articulate it, but as I was listening to what you were saying there, this idea that vulnerability really drives a lot of the fear, right? This fear of being vulnerable is huge, right? I mean, I don't know if people really even know that that's what they're afraid of. I mean, I think that's where imposter syndrome comes from. That's where, particularly when we're in leadership positions, to your point, Stacy, is that we feel like we got to talk, we got to do all these things. And that is a manifestation of fear, right? This, I got to talk, I got to do this, I got to have all the answers, I got blah, 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 blah. And so sitting down and listening to your point is something that we can do. And it's going back to what I was saying about Joe, is like going to that choice point, that pause point, right? Just taking a pause and saying, wait, what are we trying to accomplish here? And in the example of Joe doing the career change thing, you, Stacy, talking about as a leader, afraid to kind of expose your heart, you know, the emotion, you know, the vulnerability side. And to your point, just sitting down and listening is actually a brave thing to do, right? It doesn't sound like it is, and when you say it, but it actually is, right? Because it takes some bravery or courage to kind of sit down and shut up, right? And stop thinking about yourself.
And it really helps your organization or those who are working with you. It lets them know that you are, you know, you're human just like they are, that you don't know all the answers, that you are inviting them to share with you what solutions or ideas or questions or, you know, insights that you have that the leader themselves may mm-hmm. not have. So it really opens a great opportunity and allows the leader to practice being courageous.
Yeah. You know, and something, it's in just kind of feeding on that, and to your point, is like, you don't have to do a PowerPoint or come in and announce, hey, everybody, let me just wear my emotions on the sleeve and tell you how screwed up my marriage is right now. Right. You know, you don't need to tell everybody all that, but just sometimes simply just saying, I don't know, or man, I'm kind of nervous about this, you know, or showing people that you're afraid, just telling them in a confident way that, man, this is kind of making me nervous. You know, I don't know what to do here. That is actually a sign of, can be received if it's presented the same way as a confident gesture. I don't know. I've seen that many times. I've applied that to myself and it works well. To your point, Stacy, of sitting down and listening.
You know,
Richard. Oh,
no, please go, Lindsay.
Sorry. Go ahead, Lindsay.
This is Lindsay. Richard, thanks again for having us on. I just kind of wanted to go off of that because it reminded me of a topic that we actually had discussed in a group setting before, where part of being a leader is not always having the answer. Mm-hmm. And someone who, you know, acts like they have the answer or that they're going to just do what they want to do, they're not going to listen to your input or perspective, often has a really negative effect on the group or the company as a whole. You know, part of what Stacy was saying, showing that vulnerability doesn't mean, oh, I'm a human, I got a flat tire on my way to work, you know, all of that. It really is more of, I'm a human, I care about you, I care about this company, I hear you, I care about your ideas, and I want to use those effectively to create change. Because if people perceive the leader as just doing whatever they want to do, regardless, then they're not going to bring their ideas, they're not really going to feel like they're working towards any type of change or any goal or any teamwork setting. It's more of like a totalitarian setting at that point. But yeah, I think that that's so important for all leaders to embrace, is not always knowing the answer, but saying, you know, I don't know right now, but we can get there, or I will have that answer for you. Let me work on it. You know, let me hear your ideas. Or showing fear that, you know, they do have to make a big decision and, you know, that they do need that support.
Yeah.
I think is really creates more of a healthy environment.
Yeah, what I'm hearing you say is, and it feeds into this, I think, if we want to talk about harnessing this fear or how do we get comfortable with it, some of what you're saying, Lindsay, I think is wrapped up in what I'm saying this, is that I think the key or the starting point to dealing with this anxiety, to getting comfortable, to being vulnerable, right, to this kind of getting past this fear of being vulnerable, saying I don't know, is you got to make sure you have a pretty clear, and this is why what we have leaders for, is to have this a pretty clear outcome in mind of what you're trying to accomplish. And I think that can be a tremendous foundation towards dealing with some sort of anxiety. In the case of the example Joe was given in the career change, or even Stacy, you're like a leader who's running their mouth too much and they just need to shut up and listen, right? And kind of listen. At all this point, I keep saying this word choice point, or going to this point of like, wait a second, what are we trying to accomplish? If you can identify that, and that's not easy, by the way. I sit there and say, hey, let's identify what we want, because I think it's really hard to really truly identify what it is that we want, both personally and as an outcome in any situation. It may not sound like it is, but I think we focus to your point, and kind of Joe's example highlights this, is like it's real easy to say what we don't want. It's real easy for me to start listing things I don't like and don't want. For example, I don't want to do the long commute. Ow, that hurts. This sucks. I don't like the taste of this. Stop doing that. That's easy. What's hard is going, okay, what are we doing here? What outcome am I wanting? What does that outcome look like? What does success look like? What does it taste like, smell like, feel like, all that stuff? That's the work. But my point is, if you do that, now we start chipping away of not necessarily minimizing the anxiety. It's probably still going to be there, but this is what I'm talking about. You're harnessing it. Now you've got a saddle on it, and you're going to, and now we're harnessing on it, and we're doing something with it. I don't know. What do you guys think? Well, Paul, you were going to say something. I kind of started going on a soapbox there, but.
No, you're fine. So the point that Stacy made about speaking up, or basically being scared to bring an issue up with, their supervisor, or, you know, speaking up and being vulnerable. And it made me think, you know, their anxiety can come in those different ways. One, there is kind of the anxiety that's probably not rooted in any type of real threat or catastrophic loss. A lot of it is stuff to be processed. But then there are times when a person says, you know, if I'm vulnerable, people could react and they could treat me and recategorize me a certain way. Or there's an anxiety where you're like, I need to speak truth in this situation. Terribly, you know, anxious about it, but because of my true convictions on this issue, I can step up and be bold and be brave, knowing that there may be unpleasant consequences for me, but I'm compelled to do what I need and want to do. And I kind of see that same dynamic on the back end as we talk about the things that we get scared of. You know, I think once we kind of identify, sometimes it's we're not congruent. We're in a situation or in a job going the same way that we are, and we kind of feel the rub, which goes back to what you mentioned before. I think we started going on the recording is, you know, your balance between how you are addressing the anxiety and harnessing that tension is all going to be rooted in the outcome that you think is going to happen.
Absolutely.
And the belief that's backing that.
Yep.
And sometimes it's just a little bit of deconstructive work to go, well, hey, I've never had a problem with this person before. Why would I be scared to tell them about this bad news or something they can consider? Mm-hmm. Really kind of get in depth of just going through those emotions and going, all right, well, on the other side, play the worst outcome possible. Okay, they might get mad. That person might yell at you. They might not talk to you. Are they going to fire you? Probably not. You know, are you guys going to ruin your professional career moving forward? Probably not. And so I just finished Matthew McConaughey's book, The Green Lights. Mm-hmm. You had him on his on your podcast a couple months ago. It's a wonderful, entertaining book. I highly recommend it. It's very cool. But he has this in one of the early chapters, he says you have to get relative with your relativity. Mm-hmm. And the context was, in life, things are going to happen. And, you know, whatever happens, the outcome is relative to the fact that something happened in your life. And so whatever, you know, bad news or, you know, tragedy or things that come in your life, if you can, before anything starts, know that there are going to be results, and then a matter, once those come your way, it's all relative on how you perceive or deal with them. Now, the reason I bring up that example is I think in our work, in our professional life, if we can set out, have a mindset ahead of time, if we can resolve ourselves to know why we are going to be rooted and trusted and stay cool-headed and realize that we have an opportunity, a 3-second window where we get to choose whether or not we make something a big deal or a small deal, that can be a very powerful tool in that you just prepare yourself with the reality that things are going to get uncomfortable. And typically the other people maybe not uncomfortable, and that's the reason you have the anxiety. But it's trying to get that full picture view of, this is something that I'm going to deal with. On a personal note, this is kind of just what I learned in the Marines. And when I first got out of the Marine Corps, I'd go to job interviews and they would be asking about how do you deal under stressful situations. And I think they knew, because I was in the Marines, that it probably wouldn't be, you know, too big of a deal. And I used to tell people, rightfully so, with a clear conscience. And for me, fear and anxiety or stress has always been like steam to me. Mm-hmm. I can either harness it up and power that locomotive where it needs to go, or it's going to blow up in my face in a really bad way. So I always try to get that to fuel and push whatever we're doing. So I think getting a good, well-rounded understanding of these situations in life, because the one thing you don't want to do is completely negate it like somebody who's just trying to get you off the topic, but versus these are situations in your life that present opportunities for you to grow, and growing's not comfortable.
Yeah. You said a lot of great things there. And what I'm pulling out of what you said, Paul, is it reinforces what I was trying to say about the power of knowing what the outcome is, right? Because if you find yourself, if you get to the point where you're an outcome, and tied with that outcome is your belief system too. You got to know what that is, the beliefs and what you stand for. That's what I heard you say, Paul, is so you have that. That is the rocket fuel. That does provide the rocket fuel to drive the passionate behavior. And what I mean by passionate behavior is like, you know, to go ahead and to take the outcome, right? To take a baby step towards the outcome, as opposed to if I'm reacting to the anxiety and the fear, or if I'm just focused on the anxiety and the fear, I'm reacting to the situation, right? The anxiety has a hold of me and I react until the anxiety goes away. And that reaction can be, you know, taking a drink. It can be binge watching Netflix or incessantly playing video games or doing something that just gets rid of the anxiety. Whereas if you're doing what you're saying, Paul, on the outcome, if I know what that outcome is, I know what my belief is, which easy to say, but it takes a lot of work to do, right?
Yeah.
And if you know that, then that to me is the foundation for dealing with anxiety. That's what I heard you say. What I heard you say, Paul. That's what I got out of what you said.
Yeah.
Does that
exactly right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Brad, go ahead, Jason. Go ahead.
I was going to just say a lot of the things that I'm hearing so far, I think coalesce in my mind, and I think any one of these kind of tactics or mindsets sound like the right thing to do, and it makes a lot of sense, and they would behoove any of us to use them. It's also important, I think, to keep in mind that as robust as we try to, you know, build out our philosophies, that the anxieties and the fears are going to come anyway, and that we won't always react to them the way that we would like. And so I think a resilient system is really important. And that kind of took me back to thinking about one of the things Joe said really early on here about taking on a different position 100 miles away and how he talked to his friends. And I think whether it's a personal decision or a professional decision, having yourself set up with people who you trust and rely upon, I think is a good example of a resilient system. Because how often do we say, well, you know, if you were talking to a friend, what would you say? You can speak sensibly when it's not yourself. So I think having those allies is really, really important. And it kind of reminds me of when we had the fortune of having Amy Edmondson with us. She talked about psychological safety, right? And so in organizations, I think just having that safety and building up that safety kind of, again, builds this resilience around that no matter who's feeling the anxiety, no matter what that anxiety is, you can start to move forward by finding your allies again and knowing that you can move on with that. So that's kind of the stuff that came into my mind.
Yeah, I love what you said, Jason. I agree with you 100%. You know, part of this and dealing with, you know, what are the things that we can do, outcome, know the belief system, have a resilient system. And to me, when I heard you say that, certainly surrounding yourself with the right people, you got to be careful about that. Sometimes even the people closest to you can be, right? Like, yeah, like the resistance can stop you. But I agree with you, have that resiliency. And what I was going to add, and if I could augment what you said so eloquently there, was part of that resiliency is a compassion with yourself and understanding the forgiveness with yourself, understanding that, to your point, that I'm going to react to, there's going to be some things that are going to happen. It's easier for us to talk about these philosophies and be robust and say, yeah, I'm going to do this, but things are going to happen to all of us. And we're not going to react after it happens. We're like, wow, I wish I wouldn't have done that. So I think the compassionate piece feeds into your resiliency, notch in my armor, right? What do you think? Do you agree with that? I mean, I do. And so, yeah, surrounding yourself with compassionate people, people you can trust that'll give you the straight skinny, the straight scoop, but also being compassionate with yourself, I think is huge. That's something I got off when I heard you say that. Brad, I was thinking about, go ahead, Lindsay, go ahead.
No, I didn't want to, interrupt. I just had something to add to this as far as I wanted to ask the group a question. You know, we talked about being vulnerable, and I'm also about halfway through Matthew McConaughey's book, Green Lights, mm-hmm. and it's just amazing as far as, you know, finding that green light, that positivity in really any situation is so key. But I think the root of the anxiety and the fear can come from not wanting others to also feel that anxiety.
Yeah.
Because as leaders, we do care, and so I think you automatically would default to, I always have the answer. Mm-hmm. I'll always take care of it, but that's not realistic. So how do we as leaders approach that and, you know, deal with not wanting to instill that anxiety in others when we're feeling that?
Yeah, it's kind of the rescue. It's kind of the pitfall of what we're talking about here, that people, and I think a lot of us as leaders, I find that they want to be rescuers, right? We want to swoop in. We want to,
right.
We want to help. We want to find, I'll take on this. I'll do more. And being a rescuer doesn't mean, hey, I'm here to save the day. You know, come in like the Lone Ranger. It can be, you know, taking, not saying no. It can be taking on the burden. Oh, I'll do it. And, you know, I'll just do it. And because I don't want to burden my folks. But that's a rescuer mentality. And what is that? And where does that come from? I think that it comes from when we were kids, you know, how we responded to these fearful situations that, you know, we did one of three things. And one of them was we would recoil, you know, go above the fray. We would recoil, pull back, get introverted, get it. You know, that's kind of I'll see what happens here. Or some people might get aggressive and like, I'm going to get control of the situation. I'm not going to let it get control of me. And we get aggressive and we go towards it. Or we go towards somebody, which is what I'm trying to get at here from the rescuer mindset. We're taught at an early age, if we go towards something and we help and people give us love and praise and adoration for that, that means, oh, if I do this, good things will happen. So I think that's how we get into that pattern, Lindsay, to your point. I don't know. I'm not a psychologist, but it kind of makes sense to me, right? It's like, why do we do that? Mm-hmm. Because we feel like, you know, I don't want them to feel stressed out. So I'm going to go in, and part of a leadership job, we think erroneously, is to alleviate everybody's anxiety. And that's really not a job of a leader. That's just kind of feeding a drama cycle, right? It's feeding this kind of victimization cycle. If you think about it, and we think we're doing good, but we're actually kind of making the situation worse. That's how I see it. I don't know. What do you guys think?
I would agree to that. From a personal note, 3 years now, when wife and I got married, moved to new city, new job, new house, new baby, and also a close death in the family, all within 1 year. So anxiety was at an all-time high for me, but the mistake I was making was exactly what Lindsay was just saying. Y'all were just saying, I was, instead of being vulnerable with my wife and also at work, I was being that, I thought I was everyone's rock.
Right.
I thought I was everyone's pretty much guardian angel. I'll come in, swoop in, and I can take it on. Mm-hmm. Don't worry about it. I'm good. And what I was realizing is I was actually pushing people away as I was doing that. Mm-hmm. I was shutting myself off. I was not communicating with anyone. And even at one point, I knew my anxiety was at a level that I couldn't handle it anymore, and things were starting to blow up on me.
Right.
Went to see a psychiatrist, and she asked me, she goes, does your wife know you're even here? And I told her no, because I was afraid to tell my wife, because
right.
I was her rock.
Right.
And she bluntly told me that. She's like, Brad, unless you're going to be vulnerable with her, going to be vulnerable with the people you work with, you're never going to let it go. You're trying to control something that's not even in your power to control. And once I did that, it was amazing on how things changed my relationship with my wife, relationship with people at work, with friends, just became better. Because they saw me as being authentic, as real, as who I was, and not something that I was trying to be. And so, yeah, I agree that we do step into that role that we think in our mind that we should be in, and that's not at all where we should be. Our role is to be authentic, vulnerable, genuine, caring, and letting our significant others and people know what we're going through.
Absolutely.
Because they're the ones ultimately that can walk with us to bring us where we need to be.
It's a great example, and you're spot on, right? And you've heard me say that I used to have the 4 C's, now I got the 5 C's: composed, confident, consistent, courageous, and the compassionate piece. And that compassionate piece is unlocked through authenticity, transparency, and vulnerability, right? And yeah, how many times have us leaders, and I think even, you know, kind of feeding off what Lindsay said, why do we do it? I don't know. I mean, I think it's fear-based, right? I think everything, if you really strip it away, Lindsay, and what even what Brad was doing about being the rock, at the root of that was fear, right? The fear of seeing as a weak, I've got all this responsibility. I got to be the rock and this and that. And actually the confident thing, to your point, like you said, Brad, is if you unleash that authenticity, transparency, and vulnerability, that's where all the strength comes. And it's not that the anxiety of all the pressure didn't go away. It was probably still there, like dealing with all of those things that life deals us. And, you know, the anxiety's still there, but now you've unleashed all the creativity, the innovation, the support from the wife, the friends, and they're like, oh, you know, I've been here before. Hey, let me tell you, you know, and the universe starts to put people on your path. Like, you know, you can't do it by yourself.
I know for me in the past, anxiety was usually a symptom of pride that I was dealing with.
Sure.
So We're doing work. There's a project going on. I'm probably holding on to too many of the facets of the job to get it complete. There's areas that I don't specifically know about, but I don't want anybody to know that I know less, right, than maybe they thought. So that pride is like, no, you're not going to go ask for help. And then that becomes a, you know, cumulative, this task gets pushed off, this one isn't complete. And then when you get to a certain point, then it's real anxiety, right? Because right. You're really behind.
It is real.
And it's all self-induced. So over the last couple of years, one of the biggest areas of growth I've had is just to be able to stop where I'm at and go, okay, that's your own pride. It's really all about you. And when we try to take on the weight of the world and it wasn't intended to, you're going to start feeling that crushing emotion and that crushing sense of, I don't know what I can't do. So that's been very helpful. And then to Brad's point, and, you know, with Stacey's, being vulnerable and actually getting out there and saying, yeah, I messed that up. I don't know what happened, but all I can do is in good faith start from where we can do some good. That's a powerful testimony as well. To your point about outcomes, Richard, I think that's super, that clarifies and that distills the process that we really should be thinking through when it comes to anxiety. Because ultimately, you do get to choose the outcome that you're aiming for.
Yeah.
Right. You may not have a say in the circumstances or what happened, but you can choose an outcome of how you want those things for something to happen.
Yeah.
No, my person.
Go ahead.
Yeah, no, just on a personal note, I have a friend, we're in an organization together and might have to have like a difficult friend talk. You know, it's not about performance or work. It's kind of like, you know, hey, these are some things that we see and I don't know what's going on there. And, you know, I'm thinking he could walk away and never want to talk to me again. But my outcome is that I want to love him well as a friend, because I truly believe that so many people live their life in a way that's not healthy for them or other people, because nobody ever was brave enough to sit down and talk with them and go, hey man, have you thought of this? So in this situation, my outcome is I'm going to be a faithful friend that loves my friend enough to put the friendship risk. I feel that the topic is such a big thing in his life that it warrants that type of, you know, possibility. So like you said, knowing what you stand for and what you're about is really key.
Yeah,
as well,
it is the antidote. I mean, it really is. And in being, like you said, being a challenger or a coach to your friend, that doesn't feed the drama cycle. That stops it, right? It's you're always at a choice. And that's what I think is important. Like, how do you deal with the anxiety? The starting point is realize that you're always at a choice. If you're reacting to anxiety, you don't see that. If you can get to that point and that allows it, then, and you know what the outcome is, to your point, you can have that difficult conversation with the friend because you know what the outcome is. If you're anxious about the out, you know, like, well, maybe I'm going to lose a friend and this or that, you're just reacting to the anxiety and you're not going to do what is right for the situation. You may miss out on a golden opportunity, right, to make the place better than you found it. Oh, that's good. Stacey, you unmuted there. Were you going to add something there?
You know, I just want to add something really quick to what you were saying, Brad, and what you were saying, Richard, in terms of when Brad was being the rock, when he was feeling all that anxiety. And then Richard, what you were saying about, you know, really looking at what is the outcome you want to achieve here. One of the things that can happen when we take on something that we're really not comfortable doing, we think about needs versus capacities. So when we are, if we're being a rock or we're the kind of person that people pleases and never says no to anything, even though we don't have the energy to say we can't do it, we're gonna say yes, because maybe growing up, you know, by doing those things, we got rewarded. People valued us.
Yep.
And so if we feel like we're gonna, if we say no to something, that makes us look like, well, I'm not as good, or I'm a low performer, or somebody's not going to recognize me. But what I'll say about when you're really honest with yourself and you're doing those things, let's say people pleasing, when you're really honest with yourself and you ask yourself, what is the outcome I'm trying to achieve by not saying no to these things that I'm too exhausted to really do? And your answer is, well, I just want to be recognized. You know, your answer is going to help you realize that that pattern needs to change. Mm-hmm. And that anxiety will change with it, because you're being more true to who you are and what your needs are and what you truly have the capacity to do or not do.
Right. It's picking and choosing the right anxiety driven thing, because that's what you're going to, because it's not going to go away. You have to, right? And if I'm working on the wrong thing that's making me anxious, I'm just going down a rabbit hole. I'm reacting to the situation, where, to your point, Stacey, if I can know what it is and define it and get authentic with yourself and what is really happening, and not watering it down, telling the brutal truth about what the situation is and assessing, what do I have here? Yeah, that feeds into that, and it's going to allow you to, again, give you the rocket fuel, the outcome rocket fuel, to make that right baby step, at least towards it. You can't take baby steps unless you're harnessing the anxiety. You just can't. You will never get a breakthrough unless you're harnessing anxiety. You have to get comfortable with it. You have to. There's no option. The other option is just reacting to life, which is what the vast majority of us are doing. Right? And this is why leadership is so important. It's because you gotta harness it. You gotta lead a life of significance, of intentionality, not one of reaction. And that's what it's all about.
It's funny when you say, I mean, I know you've said those last line or two many, many times, but it just triggered something for me, and I don't even really know why it did. But early in my adult life, I was a jazz musician in Chicago for about 5 years. And the band leader that I played with, he always said, you know, you got to take your intimidation and turn it into inspiration. Okay. Mm-hmm. And we never really got into the tactical like this. I think he graduated the sixth grade or something, but that's the truth. But as I was just thinking through this, when you're saying that, you know, I think what helped make turning the intimidation into inspiration easier was just making it through it. But, you know, getting through it and then succeeding, or feeling some sense of, I can do it, you know? Yeah. And it's just really interesting, because this is like clicking back to me 20 years later now. But yeah, anyway, it's really interesting.
Well, I mean, as we try to bring this to some sort of conclusion, I can't believe it's already been 45 minutes almost. But, you know, this anxiety and fear is a mood to be moved through. It's not something to be obeyed, right? It's something you have to move through. You have to meet it head on. And I think that's what your conductor was saying there, or your instructor, right? You can't get to the inspiration. You have to go through it. What's the other one? You know, when you find yourself in hell, you just keep going forward, right? You have to go, you know, you can't get to heaven without going, whatever. All those kind of things. I had a thought. You said something there that triggered it. Maybe I'll bring it back. You said something too that triggered me, and I lost it. Can you believe it's been 45 minutes, guys? Can you believe that? This is so much fun for me. Fun, value-packed for me. I know I'm going to walk away this Wednesday evening a better human being. I'd like to hear from everybody else. I want to keep this at a decent length. We could probably talk for a couple more hours about this. But let me just open up the mic to kind of just go through everybody, because a couple of people I haven't heard from. I want to give everybody a chance to say something. But kind of last thoughts as we wrap up. Brian Reich, I haven't heard from you. What do you think? What are your last thoughts as we kind of wrap up this conversation?
Yeah, again, thanks for bringing us all together. And everybody tonight has had awesome points, and I thank you for all that. I'm with you, Richard. I always take something out of every meeting that we have. So thanks, everybody. I think when we're talking about fear and anxiety, and going back to what you said in the very opening remarks, Richard, was that people were wanting to know how to get rid of fear and anxiety. And we're human beings. We all experience fear. We all experience anxiety. And there's no getting around it. Mm-hmm. We tend to, as human beings, we don't all operate in the now. We tend to pull our anxieties and our fears from experiences from the past and from our memories. And our memories are never true to what really happened. And then we play them into the future. And I think it's important to, and what I've found is to, again, try to operate in the now. When I'm feeling that excessive anxiety or fear, and we talked about it a little bit in our last session, is I take a step back and try and figure out where that fear and anxiety is coming from. Mm-hmm. Take all the bad parts out and go, wait, that's just stupid. I don't really what happened. And tie that into going, get rid of the bad parts, bring the good parts in, and then move forward and then harness that to move forward and hopefully make some change and improvements and go from there.
It's the choice point. That's what I'm hearing you say, right, Brian, is like you got to take a pause no matter what's happening.
Got to take a pause.
And it's very difficult, particularly when something bad happens, is if you can get yourself to the point, okay, what is this, what is happening here? What can I learn from this? What is this teaching me? Somehow we got to get to that point. What are we trying to achieve?
And that's not easy to do.
No, it's very difficult.
As human beings, we all go through it. Right. You just got to recognize it and then play through it.
We're wired to be anxious, right?
Exactly.
That's how we survived as a species.
Exactly.
I mean, that's how we avoided getting eaten by woolly mammoths and saber-toothed tigers, right? It's because...
I let anxiety and fear eat me up for years. And mm-hmm. Some of you guys know, some of you don't. You know, 100 pounds ago and a couple heart issues later, I cleared all of that up. I learned to harness that anxiety. I learned to harness that fear, made some changes. And once you learn to acknowledge it and accept it and use it, then you'll be much better for it.
Amen. Kevin, any thoughts here? Last thoughts as we wrap up?
Yeah, it's a great group. There'll be times where I'll talk for 45 minutes straight, and there'll be times where I listen for 45 minutes. Sometimes with me, it's more about hearing everybody's thoughts and their ideas and picking something from it to make myself better. Just really quick, in terms of anxiety, I think we're all going through some anxious times with a lot of changes due to COVID. We have daycare changes, we have family changes, work's different. So, one thing just to keep in mind, and I try to do this with myself, is just to remind myself that we're all going through it. Everyone have a different way to handle anxiety, but as long as you're aware that you're not alone, no one's alone in this, and we're all trying to find our way through it, then I think that helps ease the anxiety a little bit. And then the only other point I wanted to bring up was, anxiety, I try to think of it as if you're anxious about something, you care and you're passionate about something. You actually have invested interest in it. So that in itself is a win, that you care about the person, the outcome, the company, the family member. So you should take that, as a positive that, hey, I'm anxious, but it's because I actually care about what's going on. And thanks for hosting this. It was great.
Yeah, no, that's a great point, Kevin. And it triggered something that I just remembered what Jason was saying, triggered it. That behind every kind of feed off what you're saying there, I can't remember where I heard this. I think some coach told me one time that behind every complaint, there's a commitment. And so if you find yourself in a kind of a whiny state or bitching about something, or if you see somebody, right, and trying to meet them where they're at and wondering why they're complaining and why, what are they upset about? What is this or that? Trying to be the empathetic leader. Just remember, if you can remember that behind that complaint, there's some sort of commitment. And I think that's the key. If you can find out what that commitment is personally, if it's happening to you and you find yourself, I think that's the starting point where you can start making the choice going, okay, what are we doing here? And the same thing, if you see it in somebody else, what are they trying to achieve here? What are they really afraid of? And just look behind that complaint and there's a commitment there. Great stuff, guys. Coming on 50 minutes, almost an hour. I mean, amazing. You guys are amazing. Is there anything pressing that anybody wants to close out with? Otherwise, I'll just kind of sum up. Is there any last thing that somebody's dying to say that we didn't get said? I'll take that.
Just like to really reinforce what Joe said at the beginning of the hour and what Kevin said about sharing your anxiety, that community is an invaluable component, tool, part of our life personally and professionally. So to have people in your life that you can talk about anxieties very freely and very open and candidly, it's one thing to know that everybody deals with anxiety. It's another thing to have your friends and their jobs and their stages of life really share that. And then you go, okay, yeah, we're all dealing with this together. And then when that becomes more normalized, or you realize it's not just a one-time thing, it kind of loses its power for you to be able to address it in your particular situation in life. So having community and keeping that solid foundation of, harnessing the opportunities to get the outcomes that you want is critical.
Amen. Well, guys, amazing conversation. I guess my takeaway is this, that if we can get to the choice point, if we can find the outcome, if we can be a little more compassionate with ourselves, build that resiliency up, surround yourself with the right people. Those are kind of my takeaways from this conversation. So I thought it was amazing. So I really appreciate you taking the time on your Wednesday evening. I know you got family issues to deal with. I appreciate you taking the time. And I know I'm a better person for being with spending this hour with you guys. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Richard.
Hey, thanks so much for tuning into the show. I hope you got some value out of this episode. If you did, please do me a huge favor. Tell somebody about this show. Tell your spouse, tell your kids, tell your coworkers. Let them know about the value that Dose of Leadership brings to your world. Go to doseofleadership.com. You can learn more about my services. If you're looking for somebody to speak, teach, or coach about leadership, I'm your guy. I'm known for my ability to transform individuals and organizations, teaching them the concept of creating a culture of decentralized leadership. I do think that is the secret sauce to facing all the challenges that we face today. Thanks so much for tuning into the show. I look forward to the next time we're together. And until the meantime, make it a great one.
Before Shopify, were you wondering, where are my sales at? Now you're selling with Shopify, the global commerce platform supercharging your selling. You have no problem selling online, in person, on social media, and beyond. Gary, easy on the cha-ching.
Oh, sorry, but my Shopify sales are through the roof.
Start selling with Shopify today and discover how millions of businesses around the world use Shopify to ignite their selling. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/listen. Shopify.com/listen.